doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The Adam Shine Podcast.
Welcome to episode 51 of the Adam Shine Podcast, where we always bring in passion, opinion, knowledge, entertainment on every single episode, diving into sports with an emphasis on the NFL, like we do for 15 hours a week on radio, 5 hours a week on TV. But on the pod, we'll always bring you something different than you hear and see every day, something behind the scenes. We have a great interview this week. One of our favorites from the National Football League. He did an outstanding job in Atlanta as the architect of the Falcons since 2008. Thomas Dimitroff, the former general manager of the Atlanta Falcons, is the featured guest on the Adam Shine Podcast. We'll talk to him about everything that happened at the end in Atlanta. We'll talk to him about the art of trading up, the process leading up to the draft. We'll talk to him about the NFL offseason, Kyle Shanahan. A lot to do with Thomas Dimitroff, who was outstanding as an executive for a long time in the National Football League. And we are taping on a Tuesday. It is the final Tuesday in March, March the 30th. It is such a great time of the year in sports, NCAA tournaments, the Masters next week. The NBA is piping hot. The NFL, of course, all sorts of trades and all the buzz with pro days. And, you know, everyone's still fired up about free agency. Can't wait for the NFL draft in a month. But I have to tell you, I feel alive with Major League Baseball. I really do. And baseball, my first love. And I love playing it growing up. Obsessed watching it. Love watching my Yankees. And when I say I feel alive, I'm excited for the start of the season. I did a fantasy baseball draft, an auction draft on Thursday night, and I feel like a new human being. Seriously, I feel absolutely ready for the baseball season. I love fantasy baseball. I hadn't done an auction league since college. Probably my senior year of college was the last time I did an auction league. I started doing auction leagues in the seventh grade. My dad, before he retired, was a principal in the Bronx in New York, and he was in a league with, you know, other teachers and administrators. And my first year in the league in seventh grade, you know, it's an auction league, 260 fake dollars, got to fill out the roster, and I kicked ass. I was tremendous. I won the whole league, and it was American League only, two catchers, and I beat everyone else. It was great. So the next year, I'm feeling pretty good about life. I'm feeling like I'm smarter than everyone in the room after I won as a seventh grader. And here I am in the eighth grade, and I drafted Phil Plantier for $31, and he was a disaster. I was convinced he was going to be the next Ted Williams, and the rest is history. But I did the auction draft with my buddy Nick, who's a really good friend of mine in town. And, you know, we teamed up. I asked him to be a partner. Normally in fantasy, you've heard my tales of woe with my childhood best friend, Stone, who I live in the same town as now. You know, I didn't want a partner for daily fantasy, but for baseball. And Nick is a great baseball fan, and he's done auction leagues recently and did one a couple weeks ago. He's super buttoned up and smart, so, you know, he wouldn't let me spend the money carelessly. You know, one of my good friends, Andy, and my buddy Jeff, and it's Jeff's league. It's been his league for a long time, and one of my good friends, Andy, he got us into it. We're going to do it last year before the pandemic, and Jeff is a baseball savant, and the characters in this league, tremendous. That's what makes it. And they had some newbies, including us in the league, including Chris Towers from CBS. As I'm doing my prep, I'm looking, I'm like, This guy's in the league. So, you know, it's funny when he's chiming in during the auction saying, you know, I wouldn't touch this guy. I'm like, wait, is he going to actually bid on him? And then, yeah, he's actually throwing that out to kind of get people off their rhythm. And my buddy Jeff is, you know, saying, I wouldn't touch this guy, as he's literally pressing to bid more money on a certain player. And I got to credit Bob Stew, our senior executive producer, because Bob, you are a sports freak. You are a fantasy freak. And you have told me forever I had to do an auction draft. This was AL and NL, two catchers, and we had an absolute blast. And you know, the next day, doing the radio show, before the show, I was just buzzing about it. That was an absolute rush, and I am so amped for baseball. I always am, but after doing that auction league with my guy Andy and my guy Nick and my guy Jeff, I mean, Bob Stew, you were right. I feel like a different human being.
No, I love stories like that, Adam. It brings me back to drafting Juan Pierre on the Marlins as one of my first busts. I mean, look, auctions are the best. I always say auction drafts are the best. You have a shot to get everybody. I mean, that's the best thing about it. Snake, you're always limited. You're stuck into whatever pick you get. There's just certain players you'll never touch. Look, I also finally had a draft last night. I was supposed to have it Sunday. The commissioner botched the draft order.
What does that mean?
We couldn't draft.
What does that mean?
Well, he forgot to put it in. He forgot to put it in place. So it gave everybody random picks.
No,
yeah.
No,
yes.
No.
You know, I'm prepping all day. You know me, working the sources, working the room, prepping all day, ready to go Sunday night. Not happening.
Pushed that's unacceptable. Back that's unacceptable.
Yeah, this commissioner is one of the best in the business, though. I mean, he is absolutely fantastic. He hasn't made a mistake. This league has been around for at least 10 to 15 years, and he has never made a mistake. But it was rough. It was so rough. You had to re-coordinate, do it late the next night. I will say, though, I ended up with a player in the second round. I was shocked that was there. He had never been there when I mock drafted. He will be on Shine On Sports this week. No spoilers. That's a tease for you, Adam.
Well, if you really want to get into it, can I give away the spoiler? Can I give it away?
Well, the show is Shine On Sports. It's not Stew On Sports, so I think you can.
Well, you always like to say, so I don't like to jinx it. Bob has a great line, which is there's no guarantee in life or guest booking. Because Bob can book a guest, and it's all said, and it's all locked in. But until that individual's on the line, I mean, you are nervous. Not in a bad way. I'm not being critical. I'm like that, too. Until the guest is on the line, you get nervous. Even when we promoted, and I always say, can we promote it? I'm gonna just ruin your day. I'm gonna promote it, okay?
All right. Well,
because
we
made sure we drafted him too. Because
right.
I couldn't believe we spent a lot of money, Nick and I did, on Jacob DeGrom, over $50. I think he's the number one fantasy pitcher. I was like, we're getting him. And by the way, you saw some other pitchers and what they went for in this draft. I felt great about it. Cody Bellinger, we spent $33 on him.
That's nothing.
It's nothing. And we got him early. Bob, I think he's going to have a monster year. And I know you say no guarantees in life for guest booking, but he's going to be on Shine On Sports on Thursday, Bob. And I can't wait. I'll give you the third highest price guy on my roster. So DeGrom was one. Cody Bellinger, who I think is going to have a monster season, and he'll be a guest on Shine On Sports coming up on opening day. Can't wait for that. Bo Bichette. I think Bo Bichette is going to have a monster season. And then after we spent big on those three, Nick was like, we got to just cool it a little bit. And so we did. and he, you know, you could see me, like, I'm literally, as he's bidding, I'm like tapping him with a pen, like, keep bidding. Like, I wanted Pete Alonso. I didn't want Pete Alonso. Okay. And he was right. But we got an ovation, like a legit ovation, when we went back to back to back on Jose Altuve, Gleyber Torres, and a guy you know I like a lot in Matt Chapman from the Oakland A's. That was a legit back-to-back-to-back. Also thrilled how we backed up DeGrom, which to me is important, right? If you're going to spend that kind of cash.
Yeah.
We got Glasnow, Musgrove, and I'm a big fan as our fourth starter. How about our guy, Patty Corbin, who grew up in Syracuse, listening to me when I wore my first job in Syracuse on WHGN radio? That's a legit big four in terms of a fantasy rotation.
Yeah, I love your offense. I love what you did there with the infield. That's just fantastic. And I love Tyler Glass now. Like, he just does not get enough love. He's always throwing 100 miles an hour. He had a great season last year. I know injuries are always going to be a concern with him. But man, I love that rotation. You guys cleaned up, Adam. I'm impressed. I love the lineup. DeGrom and Bellinger, I mean, it doesn't get much better than that as your top two players on your team. I mean, that is just a fantastic job by you guys.
It's great. And the name of the league is the Kreplach League. Have you heard of a Kreplach, Bob Stu?
No.
The Jewish dumpling. So, let me tell you something. There's nothing. I mean, my grandmother would make the best Kreplach. It was so delicious. That's the name of this league. So if we win it, Bob, Kreplach on me. Okay, that is a promise. Yeah, Kreplach, well, I'll take you to a deli, a kosher deli nearby, and we'll have all sorts of Kreplach. See, you know, it's all sorts of incentive. Got to pass off the Jewish delicacies to the great Bob Stu. But I am so fired up for baseball, and it got me thinking. You know, I love these over-unders for the win-loss total for the upcoming season. Look, it's going to be an interesting year. I think the American League is down, just as a general statement. I think the National League has a lot of really good teams. Give me your five favorite over-unders for the upcoming season.
All right, well, I'll give you my first one that's my favorite. I like the Mets over. It's 90.5. I've got the Mets winning the NL East. I love the moves in the offseason. Adding Lindor, that was fantastic. I've always been a massive Carlos Carrasco fan, even though I know he has the hamstring injury. You know, especially a hamstring injury going to the season. Oh, he'll be back 1-2 weeks. I'm sure it'll be July 4th. He'll be making his Mets debut as Joey Chestnut. He's woofing down hot dogs. But that's besides the point. The thing about the Mets that sets them up apart from the rest of the division, Adam, they upgraded the bullpen. The Mets bullpen has Edwin Diaz, Seth Lugo, Trevor May, Dellin Betances, Aaron Loop, Familia, Castro, and Gazelman. The Mets actually had competition for middle relief roles in spring training. You never see that with the Mets. They never spend on middle relief. But that's always the reason why the Yankees are good every year, no matter what. Because even when they have those injuries, that bullpen depth carries them on certain days in the middle of the summer. The Mets are going to have the same success this year. They're going to win around 93 games. I love the over 90.5 wins. That's my favorite over for the year, Adam. Speaking of which, sticking in the NL East, I got the Nats under here. 84.5, because what goes up, it must come down. If the Mets are winning 93 games, and I also like the Phillies to win more than 81 games, the Nats are going to be the team that suffers. Look, they finished dead last in the NL East last year with the Mets. And look, while I like the additions of Josh Bell, Kyle Schwarber, Brad Hand, I worry about the rotation. I mean, Strasburg is already injured. He already has a calf issue. They're saying it's nothing, but he didn't pitch last year at all, and he's made of glass, and he gets hurt every year, over and over and over. Scherzer is 36. He really struggled last year. Can Juan Soto carry the Nationals to 85 wins? Yeah, I mean, he could do that, but the problem is the rest of the lineup, they never made up for the loss of Rendon. So I'm taking the under 84.5 with the Nationals. I'll give you two more that I love, Adam. I do have a fifth also, but it's a reluctant fifth over-under.
Okay.
I like the Astros under. It's 87.5.
I love that one.
Now, the only reason I hesitate is because the division's a crapshoot, but the Astros have a lot going against them. I mean, first off, the sign-stealing scandal. Guess what? Fans are going to be allowed back in the ballparks this season. The Astros never got those sweet sounds of karma.
Boo!
They never got those sweet sounds of boo karma, Adam, and they still stunk last year. They were 29-31 in a shortened season. People forget because they made the playoffs and made a run. They were under 500. They were terrible. No Verlander. He's getting Tommy John. Greinke is 37 years old. Love Ryan Presley as a closer. I just don't like the rest of the bullpen. Altuve's over 30. Correa's constantly injured. Brantley's 33. Springer is gone. There are so many reasons to not like the Astros. The only thing I do worry about, if Yordan Alvarez has a great season, this could unravel on me. He's a great talent. But other than him, I don't find any reasons to believe in Houston. I'm taking the under for the Astros, 87.5. And the other one I love, the Brewers, Adam, over 82.5. Somebody's got to win the NL Central. I think the Cardinals are overrated. I love Woodruff leading the rotation. Hader and Devin Williams out of the bullpen. That's the best 1-2 punch in baseball. Yelich has got to bounce back. I'm taking the Brewers over. They win 87 games. What are your five best, Adam? And I'll give you my reluctant one after you're done.
Okay, here's the deal. First of all, I vehemently disagree with you on Washington. And I think Washington would be over. I'm not taking Washington as one of my teams. I just want to say on the record, I disagree with you on Washington. I think they have a ton of talent. Last year was one of those years right from the jump where you kind of throw it out the window. So I think they're going to even everything out. I think they're going to win about 85, 86 games. So yep. I wouldn't touch Washington. I love your Astros idea. I just wouldn't touch them. Because of the division. That was the last team I filled in terms of – last division I filled in terms of picking a winning team. I can't. I look at that AL West. I mean, the Angels, you know, the A's, the Astros are all flawed. I wouldn't touch them. Let me give you seven. There are seven over-unders. I know the exercise was five. You ready?
Yeah.
Number one, under for the Red Sox, 80.5.
I think the
Red Sox are going to be horrendous. Number two, Dodgers over 102.5. I think the Dodgers are going to be one of the greatest teams in the history of baseball in the regular season. Outside of the Padres, I think the division is down. David Price isn't even in the rotation. They can withstand injury. Bellinger just had the surgery, changed his stance. He's going to rock and roll. 162 games for Mookie. They signed Trevor Bauer. Over for the Dodgers, 102.5. I'm going over for the Padres at 94.5. I think the Padres are going to be terrific this year. Over on the Blue Jays, 86.5. I think Toronto makes the playoffs. Over on the Phillies, you referenced it, 80.5. I think that's way too low. Mm-hmm. I think that Joe Girardi is a superb skipper. Again, certain things you just strike from the record when it comes to everything that transpired during a shortened season in a pandemic. I'm going to take the Mets over 90.5. And I love your call on the Milwaukee Brewers. I very much considered them as a playoff team. 82.5 to me was very, very low. So I'm going to go under with Boston, over with the Dodgers, over with the Padres, over with the Blue Jays, over with the Phillies. I'm going to go over with the Mets and over with the Milwaukee Brewers. Now, for playoff teams, give me Yankees, White Sox. I'm going to take the Angels. I'm obsessed with Trout, as you know, and I think Anaheim improved the bullpen. Angels to win a down West. I think Oakland's worse, Astros worse. Blue Jays and Twins are my wild card teams. I love Toronto's offense. NL East, I'm going Braves, Cardinals for the Central, Dodgers for the West, Padres and Mets for the wild card. And I've got, for the 16th straight year, the Dodgers over the Yankees, Bob, in the World Series.
Yeah, I could see that coming a mile away. I'm sharing most of my brain with you, Adam. I did mention I might have a fifth over-under, and I'm really reluctant about it. I'd actually take the Yankees under 95.5.
Really?
I'm never going to bet that because I'm rooting for the Yankees every single day. You're not taking a team you root for to hit the under. But I think the Yankees will win around 93 games. But it's funny because I'm going to contradict myself right now because I love them to win the AL East. Without a doubt, running away. I like the White Sox to win the Central, and I like the A's to win the West. I'll take Toronto and the Twins to make the playoffs as well. In the NL, I love the Dodgers to win the West. I'm taking the Brewers, not the Cardinals in the Central. I love the Mets in the AL East, as I mentioned. Love the over. The Padres, of course, are going to get that first wild card. I don't even think there's any question. And I got the Braves getting the second. And for the World Series, I'm taking the Yankees also to go back to it. I like the Padres to beat the Dodgers, Adam. I just think Clayton Kershaw's a little older. I am not a believer in Trevor Bauer at all. His spin rates were absolutely insane last year. He was an elite pitcher. That can't hold up. It's not going to sustain. He was terrible the year before. He was the opposite of what he was. I have no idea what we're going to get with Bauer this year. I like the Padres because I like their pitchers in a playoff series over the Dodgers. I think that's how they beat LA. It comes down to a playoff series. I would take the Padres in seven. The Yankees, they'll beat the Padres in the World Series this year.
You know, for awards, Bob, every year I take Trout. You know, I think he's going to go down in history as the best baseball player of all time. And it's a shame that the Angels have just wasted his career. I mean, you take Trout, non-Trout division, I'll go with my guy, Bo Bichette. I'm going to go really chalky for awards. Trout, Soto, Cole, DeGrom for MVP, Cy Young.
Yeah, it's funny. I would take Soto if I was taking the Nationals over, because that's the only way in my mind that they can win the division, make the playoffs. Soto would have to have a crazy year. Like, if you don't pick Trout in the AL, you're basically a fool, right? I mean, he's plus 225. He's always first or second. If you don't take it, I know you have Bo Bichette. I like Vlad Guerrero Jr. also Blue Jays at plus 2,500. That's a nice long shot. The other extreme long shot I like, Giancarlo Stanton at plus 4,000. I know he's always injured. He always gets hurt. If he plays one full season on the Yankees, Adam, how many home runs is he going to hit? 45? 50 home runs?
Yeah.
And he's also on the Yankees. He'll be playing on national television every other night. So that's why I like Stanton. In the NL, I would take Ronald Acuna Jr. to win NL MVP at plus 800. I think he's the reason the Braves make it. They make the playoffs. They make a run. He has an incredible season. I like Shane Bieber in the AL, Adam, at plus 400. A long shot. I like Lizardo of the A's. He's only 22. He could be primed for a breakout.
That's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. And he started pitching well at the end of the year last year. And he's plus 2,500. He's always been a top prospect. Those are the kind of guys I look for. Diamonds in the rough. In the NL, I can't go chalk at him. I can't go DeGrom. I'll take Brandon Woodruff of the Brewers, plus 2,200. If they win the division, I'd argue it's going to be because of him. Those are my picks for the awards.
Did I tell you I'm coaching Theo's T-ball team? This is the first time I've ever coached T-ball before. I coached Maya's softball when she was in first grade and second grade. I'm coaching with my buddy Brian and my buddy Jake. We got our first practice coming up on Saturday. I mean, I'm like sitting there at night Googling drills, you know, run the bases, roll them ground balls. You know, it's supposed to be beautiful on Saturday morning. We'll do it for an hour. You know, there's going to be games once a weekend. I don't know what I'm going to be doing coaching T-ball, but I'm oddly fired up about this. And Theo's pumped up I'm doing it. I think that I'm going to be the Kyle Shanahan of the T-ball league. Cerebral players coach, you know, likable, you know, my X's and O's are going to be better than yours. I mean, if you had to off the top of your head, compare me to an NFL head coach. I would compare myself to Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah.
The preparation, the attention to detail. You know, Kyle sees a problem, fixes a problem, love the trade from 12 to 3. You know, they can't win with Jimmy Garoppolo, and I don't want to hear about Jimmy staying on the team. What NFL coach do you think I'm going to be as a T-ball coach?
I think Kyle Shanahan's a fair comparison. I could see you running safety squeeze bunts in T-ball, Adam, with your preparation and running plays. You know, you could be more of an Andy Reid. You're a player's coach. You're a Hall of Famer. I think that's a pretty good one. You put your players in the best positions to succeed. To me, it'd be either Kyle Shanahan or Andy Reid. I think those are fair comparisons.
All right. Well, we'll let you know how this goes. Thomas Dimitroff will get his opinion on Kyle Shanahan trading up from 12 to 3 and everything going on in the NFL as we move along on the Out of Time podcast.
Doers, mowing season is here with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hello, everyone. This is Bruce Murray, and I'd love you to join me on my podcast, Going Long, where every week we talk to the sports stars themselves, like NFL Hall of Famer Brett Favre.
I was probably better at baseball than I was football.
And the people that love them, like TV legend George Wendt.
I thought about changing to be a Cub fan as a career move.
And sports casting icon Linda Cohen.
I never thought I'd still be doing it at this point in time.
You can listen to Going Long every Thursday on the SiriusXM app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The featured guest this week on the Adam Schein podcast, one of my favorite guys in the National Football League, did a sensational job as the general manager of the Atlanta Falcons, my guy, the great Thomas Dimitroff. Thomas, how are you? Appreciate the time.
Man, you gave me chills with that lead, and I appreciate that. That's cool. No, it's so great to hear your voice again. I'm glad you invited me on. Everything has been good. It's different. A lot of different things going on right now, not being in the middle of the draft preparations.
You know, we always chat around this time and have forever since you were in Atlanta to talk about free agency and getting ready for the draft. And, you know, I'm curious, I mean, and you obviously were so successful and your preparation was legendary. What's it like for you on both the professional, personal level, not being in the weeds for the first time in ages?
You know, I've thought a lot about it, and I was wondering how I was going to deal with it. You know, and I've told people time and again, Adam, that during the season, that's kind of our time off as general managers and as team builders. When you get to this time of year, like you just alluded to, I mean, there's a lot going on. Your life is completely immersed in it. You're not able to spend time around your family and your loved ones and such because you're so focused on, you know, building a team during this time. It's my favorite time of the year. So it is a little bit counterintuitive for me not to be involved in watching video of players every second of my day. That said, I feel like I'm able to pull back a little bit and look at it from a much bigger picture than I normally do. And that's something that has been on my mind a lot, Adam, because my goal during this year of potentially being off for a year or whatever it may be is to really start to study the league at a much bigger level and a much broader level than just, you know, the Atlanta Falcons and peripheral other teams. That's important for me to try to get more of an understanding and knowledge of the direction of this league for my next steps in this career.
I love that. And yeah, you were just so superb doing it for a long time. And I was fascinated to know how you were doing on that personal and professional level, because it's always been your time to shine. No question about it. And when you think about what you accomplished, I mean, no one likes to lose their job, especially if it's a bit of a surprise. And it certainly was for me when you were relieved of your duties last year in Atlanta. I would have to think, you know, didn't win the Super Bowl, won a lot of games, rebuilt the program, rebuilt it again. I mean, there's got to be so much you look back and say, wow, that was a big success as you were running the Atlanta Falcons, I thought, so expertly for so many years.
Well, I look at it that way. And I think all of us who have been around a position for quite a while, and I've been in the league almost 30 years, 13 in this general manager role, and I often think about it, you know, legacy. You think about, you know, what are you leaving behind? What have you done? How have you affected the organization, other people around you? And I look at that as a, you know, we took this team over, myself and Mike Smith, back in 08 after the Michael Vick debacle, and we rebuilt it. So it was a up, and then there was a down moment, of course, with Smitty when Mike Smith did end up getting fired. We hired Dan Quinn, and then Dan and I were fortunate enough to grow this back, the team back into being a successful championship style caliber team. And then we fell again. So I sit there and I think the up-down element can only make me that much better, not to talk about me, but humbly make me that much better as a team builder, because you get a chance to truly dig into what went wrong and what went right, and more importantly, what went wrong, because we all learn from our mistakes. And yeah. I know that's an overused cliche, but you and I both know it in our business, having been in it this long. And I think it's going to benefit. I think it's going to benefit a lot of people. I was surprised when it happened, no question about it. I have a good relationship with Arthur Blank, and I appreciate what I learned there. That said, I'm looking forward to taking another shot at it one time in the future.
I love hearing it, and that'll be great for you and for the National Football League. And you absolutely should be very proud of what you accomplished. I thought it was excellent in Atlanta. I want to kind of go around the league a little bit and, you know, use your brain and pick it a little bit, Tom, in terms of, you know, some of the areas of expertise. First and foremost, as, you know, we're sitting here having this conversation on a Tuesday at 3 o'clock Eastern time, you know, so much buzz about pro days. When you were sitting in a general manager seat, how did you use pro days? Was it just a little tool? Was it a big piece? What does a pro day actually mean in terms of a player evaluation?
Well, I think, Adam, what's important to know is some of us use pro days. Some of the organizations use pro days strictly as the basis for their final step of the evaluation process. Of course, they've spent a year and a half looking at players with their scouting staff, and then, you know, they get their big hitters at the pro days normally. Or in our case in Atlanta, we were very different. Arthur Blank was very good at providing us with the family jet, and that made it where we were traveling around the country, really setting up our own pro days. Now, again, there's a lot of discussion about that, as you know, when individual workouts are happening and someone gets hurt. That's another topic of conversation. We use the pro days for our scouting staff to really hone in on final gathering of information, final research of the individuals we were looking at. And they would bring that information back. We would get all the video from the pro day into our film library, of course, and we would hone in on that while we were going around the country visiting and narrowing down on some of the main players that we were looking to take. So we were using pro days, but we were also setting up our own pro days. Thanks to Arthur that he was allowing us to use that private jet to get 3 and 4 of our own pro days in a day.
Wow. That's remarkable. That's a great job by Arthur Blank. No question about it. And obviously there's always a lot of conversation around the quarterbacks, right? I mean, it's a quarterback driven league, and they're the stars and the faces of organizations and the National Football League. You know, have you ever changed an evaluation of a quarterback, positive or negative, based upon something you saw at a pro day?
Oh, no question about it. I think, you know, you take all of that information, and I do truly believe as a general manager, as the main person that normally is going to take the tag off the board, you have to be very, very astute and very, very acutely aware of everything up to the very moment. That's how I have always believed that, up to the point where you're actually taking the tag off the board. So there is no question that a pro day, if someone was lollygagging around, lack of a better word, or if someone wasn't focused, or someone, you know, you realize through your interaction with the person or watching them interact that they weren't as mentally acute as you had once thought, or they didn't move around as well as you had thought, there is no question that pro days bring to light sort of that final touch on how you're sort of painting that masterpiece in my mind. That's how I've always looked at it.
I love that. That's great inside information. Now, you know, big topic in the NFL this week was the monster deal with the 49ers and the Miami Dolphins. And Kyle Shanahan, who you know very well, was your offensive coordinator for years in the Super Bowl year in Atlanta. He traded up from 12 to number 3. And there's no doubt that he left no ambiguity when he spoke to the press. John Lynch spoke to the press on Monday. They are trading up to take a quarterback with the 3rd overall pick in the draft. What was your reaction to that trade from a San Francisco perspective?
Well, I wasn't surprised. I mean, you know, Kyle is a very, very smart offensive mind, of course, and settling into that head coaching position. He has always had a very, very strong opinion of who he wants around him in those very key pillar positions, of course, and especially at the quarterback spot. And I wasn't surprised. I wasn't surprised. And knowing John Lynch well, I wasn't surprised at all. They believe in not sitting on their hands. And I love that. That is what I believe through and through. You cannot survive in this league as much. I don't care what your contracts are. You will not be around long if you're sitting there kind of hem-hawing around and hesitant about making your moves. If you believe as a head coach and as a general manager that this is going to be a difference maker for you, then I'm all for making the move. And you know that, again, my history of trades has been aggressive over the years, and I take a great deal of pride in it because I've never been one that is hesitant with my moves. And I love that about Kyle and John, and I think it's they obviously have their sights on someone. I know recently they've been talking about the Mac Jones situation, of course, right?
That's been the main topic, and that's been the main guy that has really been linked to Kyle Shanahan. Do you knowing Kyle and seeing Mac Jones, and he was at Mac Jones's pro day, and by the way, Mac Jones, Thomas, has been compared to Matt Ryan, who you drafted in 2008 with your first ever draft pick with the Atlanta Falcons. Do you see those similarities and, you know, comparisons? And can Mac Jones be, in essence, Matt Ryan?
Well, I think I would say first, Adam, you know, knowing, again, Kyle, and this is being very complimentary, of course, he's very intelligent to that point. He appreciates intelligent people around him. Of course, Mac Jones is that, and Mac Jones has a very good understanding, of offenses, of course, and one that was massively dominant in the NCAA. So that's always been something that I think has been very important to Kyle. So if in fact it is true that he is really focused on Mac, I could understand that. Per the comparison to Matt Ryan, I know that both Matt Ryan and Kyle had a great deal of respect for each other at a lot of levels, not only for Matt's physical skills, but Matt's mental skills. And the same with Matt towards Kyle. I mean, obviously we did some really good things as an organization while they were working together. So the opportunity for Kyle potentially to bring someone in that has similarities to Matt Ryan. And I think they're there. I mean, you know, physically maybe Max a little bit shorter than Matt, but they're the accuracy underneath, the understanding of the game, the calm under pressure. I think, you know, Matt has gotten the Atlanta Falcons out of a lot over the years because of the way that he ended up handling himself and having that mental toughness in the pocket. And I think Mac has that. Mac Jones has that element to him as well. So, look, there are some interesting similarities. It will be really interesting to see how this all plays out.
I love that. And by the way, the us works forever. I mean, you're always going to be the us always works. It's always us. I mean, you built that thing. You drafted Matt. You won a lot of games. You keep saying us, Thomas. Your name will one day have a banner up there in the rafters. Seriously, I mean, what you accomplished with the Atlanta Falcons, when you make that trade up, and you kind of gave me the chills when you talked about, you know, going up and getting your guy. When John and Kyle make that trade, they've got a list of three, right? There's no ambiguity there of, you know, maybe this guy, maybe that guy. When they make that trade, which shapes a franchise, they've got a guy in mind, correct?
Oh, there's no doubt in my mind. Again, not to answer for them, but knowing how we have done it in the past, yes, you have a guy in mind, and it is shining. Every time you wake up in the morning, you are daydreaming about having that person join. I had it with Matt Ryan back in 08. I remember every day as we got closer and closer to the draft, I was so focused on Matt Ryan, thinking about Matt Ryan flying across the country. Little things would pop into my head. His number would pop into my head. It would come on to the TV screen on a completely unrelated topic, or something would pop into my mind. It was the same with Julio Jones. I was so focused on Julio Jones down the stretch. So, yes, it is very, very much on your mind. That said, the smart people, the well-thought-out people know that there are alternatives, and you have to have that. You have to say, if this doesn't work, scenario B and C are right there, and they may not be exactly what we want, but they are options that we will walk away thinking this was a massive win. There's no way they're going to go in there thinking that they have only one person ever, even though that's strongly on their mind. They have to have another plan.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned Matt, and I remember the conversation before that draft. I mean, Matt's last year in Boston College, he threw a bunch of interceptions. And I remember Jeff Jagosinski, who was coaching him up, told him to keep throwing into double coverage. I remember interviewing Matt about that and listening to him talk to Tim Hasselbeck, who I was working with, a couple of Boston College guys. They were having that conversation. How do you, as an executive, dive deep into a system, into the film, into someone's psyche when you're picking a franchise quarterback?
So, first of all, yes, Matt did have a number of interceptions. I heard there was all kinds of outcry about that. One of the things that was interesting, however, on the other side was, and I have to be careful about this, but I mean, his supporting cast wasn't thriving then. I mean,
no
to
question.
Your point as well.
No question.
And what was asked of him at a lot of levels, Matt is such a soldier and Matt is such a competitor that he will do that, take a shot in the face after he has thrown an interception, get back up and be resilient and make another play. He's always been that way. So that was something that was a big selling point for me. Yes, of course I didn't like the interceptions, but you know, there were other things around it that I believe you could look beyond at. And, you know, to your point about, you know, looking at quarterbacks and how you look into systems and all the other information that you have, oh, there are so many things. I mean, to me, you know, a lot of people think there are a handful of traits that you have to have as a quarterback. And every team, Adam, as you know, have, you know, their rankings of what those traits are. And they could vary from team to team, offensive system to offensive system within the NFL. You definitely have to go back and you have to look at the system. You have to look at the supporting cast. You have to look at exactly the throws he was making, how he was making them, where they were complete, where they weren't, where he was errant on the field. The situation today, I think now, which is probably an interesting segue into analytics and what is out there and what young first-time GMs are privy to and other GMs are privy to now versus 10, 12, 13 years ago. I'm talking about, you know, PFF and other companies out there that are rocking statistic analysis that is unbelievable to supplement the very good football minds out there. And I think that is, I love that. I think it's really, really good for the NFL. Again, I understand there are a lot of people that believe I just have something. I felt it in my gut and my heart was telling me it's this quarterback. I think you can only go so far that way. I think the intelligent ones and the well thought out ones are going to look at all of those systems. They're going to analyze them all by their own eye and everything, but they're also going to take into consideration everything else that is out there at their disposal as far as from an analytics standpoint, and that's very important.
How did you use analytics? How should one of these nouveau general managers use analytics and use a tool like Pro Football Focus?
Well, I think, you know, analytics, again, we've come so far with it. What used to be, you know, the basics of statistical analysis was good. You know, it was solid and it was just a little, you would kind of look at it and you would say, okay, I have a really strong opinion because I've been doing this a long time and my eye is telling me this and my heart is telling me this. And then now these guys, these general managers, and I would do it, and I did it up to the time that I did get fired, was, you know, continuing to legitimately supplement, not just supplement, like look at it and take, you know, 2 minutes and look at that sheet of paper that was handed to you, but truly analyze all the different nuances and different categories that are presented. It is unbelievable now, without getting into a ton of that, but you could go on a site like PFF and dig yourself into the different elements of analysis and you would be blown away. It's no longer just interceptions and the interception touchdown ratio and, you know, the status of the offense. there are so many elements that are available. So I would suggest that anyone who, you know, whether it's a young general manager who's open-minded to it, is really, really dig in and hone in on the, you know, the what we call sometimes that heat map, right? Where all the balls are going, how they're going to those areas, and then really cut and slice all that information up and continue to, you know, dig in and compare all of these different attributes to other quarterbacks that are out there, not only in this year's draft, Adam, but also in you know, the last, I'm a big believer in the last 10 to 12 years of the NFL. I usually stay in that area and compare it to what's out there in the league right now. Statistical analysis is important, but also the comparatives. I'm a big believer in comparatives. Whatever I do in the NFL, however I've picked players, whether it was a quarterback or a linebacker or a corner.
I love that. I'm kind of blown away by it. I'm mesmerized. And, you know, I was also mesmerized, Thomas, by Julio Jones and the trade. And, you know, I tell me if you remember this. I mean, there's a million things going on, right? But I'll remember this for a long time. When you made that trade, I was like, Thomas, why are you giving up all those picks for a wide receiver? And I said as much on the air. I don't even know if you remember this. You called me probably a week after the draft, right? I wondered aloud, why is Thomas Dimitroff making this trade, going up from 27 to 6 and giving up all these first rounders? It's 2011. I'm living in New York City at the time, in Westchester County now, and I'm pushing my three-year-old on the swings. I see Thomas Dimitroff on my phone. I'm like, oh, I should probably get this. And I remember the genesis, the origin of the conversation. It was, Adam, you always do you. I'm telling you, this guy's special. Take me through the arts of the deal, trading up for Julio Jones, and how you know when to say when on giving up those picks for your guy.
Okay, so there were a lot of layers to it. Suffice to say that it had to do with the fact that we were an organization and an offense that was good. We had Tony Gonzalez, of course, because in 2009 we traded up for him with my good buddy Scott, of course. And that was one, by the way, when we did that trade, I remember telling Tony Gonzalez, please don't screw me and only stay here for 1 year, because I will not have a job if I trade for you. He ended up staying 5 years, of course. Hey, that was great. But back to the Julio situation, I remember vividly thinking, we have to do something within this organization that is going to have defenses on their heels because of our offense putting them on their heels. We are going to have someone, and I might have said this publicly maybe once or twice, not physically similar at all, but what DeSean Jackson used to do to us at Philly, and I told my buddy Howie Roseman, I'm like, Howie, this used to drive me bonkers. Every time we played Philadelphia, there was someone who was going to either take the top off or run something underneath, but he would throw us into a tizzy defensively, whether he caught four balls or 14 balls. So I started looking into that. Luckily, we had an owner who was into it, because, you know, an owner in that situation could stop an historic move that way.
Sure.
21 spots at that point was honestly really, really big, as you know. And it was before some of the younger GMs like Les Snead and some of the other guys that came in here who were moving a lot of players around, and it became much more in vogue to trade. We have a lot more trades now than we ever used to, I feel. At least that's my take on it.
No question.
But, you know, as far as Julio goes, you know, to the skills and watching him and what he did to justify, it took me a while, and I will share this with you. When I first started considering what the compensation was going to be, like you all, like you on the phone or you listening, it had me on my heels. I'm like, wow,
yeah.
I don't know about this. But like anything, when you really start chewing on something and ruminating about everything around it, you become numb a little bit to it. You start saying accepting of it, and you start thinking, okay. And then what we did is we spent a lot of time looking at the statistical analysis of the successes of the picks that were going to be hypothetically given up. And we started doing a lot of deep study on, you know, the success of starters in the fourth round and beyond. And there were some very, at that point, some very low percentages of, I don't even know, it was less than 15% of those fourth rounders were even starting in the league, because the fourth rounders were the big ones for me, right? They were adding compensation numbers, right? We knew we were going to be giving away the firsts, right? It's when you started adding more picks. And, you know, I look back on it. There, again, we decided in the end that this was what we needed. It was a once in an organization's lifetime, I felt, at least a GM's career, that I would do something like this. But we are at such a spot, given everything we looked at from a statistical analysis, his abilities, of course, his non-diva-like that he was as a receiver, which was really important for me and us. And we you know, really began to hone in on trying to decide on, you know, what was going to happen. I took a lot of heat. I even remember when the Browns, after they did the trade, at that time, who was their head coach? I can't even remember.
I'm trying. It was Holmgren was involved, right?
Was involved. Yep.
Who was the coach?
And their head coach at the time, it'll come to me in a second. And this is horrible because I know him. He's a coordinator in the league now. My gosh. We're going around and around here. But anyway, he got onto a setup where he was with he was downtown in Cleveland, and they had a big press conference there. He didn't realize the press was there, but they had a big press gathering there as well. Or someone took some of the words that he had shared, and he was like, "This was huge. This was the best deal. We got the best deal out of this ever in the history of the league. Can't believe they did it. Of course we had to take this." And I remember being agitated. My good friend, God rest his soul, Tom Heckert at the time, I called Tom fuming, thinking, wait a minute, when you do trades in this league, just so you know this and your listeners would know this, is you always make sure that it's win-win for the most part. It's not like back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Right, right.
You're trying to screw your guys. In this world, you have to have good working relationships beyond a Julio Jones trade. And so it was really important for me to know that this was win-win, whether it was or wasn't, but it was good to be perceiving it that way and portraying it that way. So when their head coach at the time made comments about it, and I was
Pat Shurmur.
Pat Shurmur. I'm apologized to Pat for that, because we know that for sure. It was Pat, yes. And when he said that and all that, it went down. So I was agitated. I look back, so it made it that much sweeter for me later. When you look back and you look at all the players that they traded and drafted off of that trade, who didn't, who didn't last and didn't thrive in that setting, it obviously was a little bit of, it put it all in perspective for me and for our organization, that we felt in the end that, you know, again, humbly, we did the right thing, and I would never do it any differently. People ask me today, would you do it differently? That was a lot to put into that. And I said, no. Honestly, Julio had one of the best catches in the history of the league in that Super Bowl in 16. And we were ready to march down to win the Super Bowl. And he was a very big reason that we were in that spot. Unfortunately, we didn't take care of business.
What a story. I don't, you know, it's funny. And I remember who they drafted. I remember, obviously, what transpired with those players. It turned out to be an all-time great trade. As we look back on it, I remember saying at the time, like, why is Thomas giving up all these picks for Julio Jones? And it completely worked out. You know, and I love what you even said about Les, too. And now you see all these other trades. And I remember when I had Les on the radio show after the Jalen Ramsey deal, and he gives up two first-round picks. He said, Adam, that's not really much. You know, I gave up one first-round pick. The first-round pick, one is for Jalen Ramsey, and the other is Jalen Ramsey. I'm like, okay, there we go. Do you think in a lot of ways, Thomas, that Julio Jones deal, because you took a lot of heat and it turned out that a lot of critics, myself included, were wrong. Do you think maybe it kind of changed the mentality of GMs? Because I think sometimes GMs are almost afraid of the criticism when it comes to making a trade like that.
Well, yeah. There's a lot written about that as well. Michael Holly wrote in his book that he wrote about, Bill and Scott Pioli and myself, and you know, that Bill, you know, was against that move, you know, as a guy who I trust and respect a great deal, learned a lot from him, to hear that, you know, that wasn't necessarily what he would do. And I did it anyway, was a major growing point in my career, right?
Sure.
The best coach in the history of the league and team builder is, you know, maybe attempting to dissuade you, and you do it anyway. That was a big deal for me, having been in only 4 years at that point. But I would say GMs now, I really truly believe they are much more open to making these aggressive plays on players. You know, that's a big thing for them right now, not just to get notoriety, but because, you know, no one wants to just sit and wait anymore. It seems that way. And, you know, I sit back and I think of the Heat on it, and there's no question. I know that I had people telling me, Thomas, do you understand that you will not keep this job long if this doesn't work out? And I was very aware of that. I was very aware, at least that was going to be the narrative. I remember, I don't know if you remember this, and I joked with John Gruden about it. I was sitting there arm in arm with Arthur Blank when they were getting ready to announce it in 2011. And we are excited, and they announce it. John Gruden comes on, and I swear they showed probably 11 drops in a row. I might be exaggerating, of Julio Jones dropping balls. Mm-hmm. And the narrative from John was, why would they ever do this? This is way too much. It was like a very negative portrayal of what we did. And I just felt it funny. So Arthur's grasp on my arm slowly loosened up. He looked at me, and believe me, I had some choice words for John in the draft room at that point. But it was funny how that all played out. And again, John and I joked about it later on, a few years later.
It's amazing. Anything stand out to you in terms of this wild off season in the NFL? Any moves that caught your eye, positive, negative, that you think could be difference making for given teams?
Well, I mean, there are a number of different things that are going on right now, and I still can't get my eye off the quarterback situation. I still look at, you know, the whole Detroit and LA deal, how that went down. Like, that is really, really interesting. It's going to be really fascinating to see how it plays out. You know, you have two guys who worked together. I mean, Les does a deal with, you know, the guy that, you know, he was teaching over the last few years. Like, that's an amazing storyline in of itself, right? And the first move that Brad Holmes makes, that's a big move, right? Those are big moves. And another really, really big move for Les Snead. I mean, Les, you know, he doesn't concern himself with that. I mean, there's a lot of people with a lot of opinions about it, and, you know, he goes through with what he believes is best for that organization. So I'm always fascinated by that on the quarterback side, but also on the big trade side. Very interested in what Howie's doing at Philadelphia, and, you know, that's not an easy move for him. I have a great deal of respect for Howie Roseman. He and I have a really good working and personal relationship. Mm-hmm. I have a great deal of respect for how he builds teams, and, you know, making that move is not easy when you're moving the guy that you, you know, brought on and put a lot of a lot into, not only financially, but of course, you know, organizationally, right? So I'm really fascinated to see how that plays out.
How about the Atlanta Falcons with that fourth overall pick? I mean, is it still old hat and old habit for you? You're paying close attention to what the Falcons do in the draft?
I am. A lot of people are asking me, what are they doing, T? You know, what are they doing? Would you take a quarterback? There's a lot of discussion about that. And I'll be really interested. I don't really want to chime in on it right now, but if I get closer to the draft time and anyone does decide to have me on their network to have some sort of consulting or overview, I may have more of an opinion then.
I love it. Thomas, this conversation was awesome. It's so great catching up with you. I'm just obsessed with that Julio Jones story, the Mac Jones, Matt Ryan comparison. It is so great to hear your voice, and continued success in everything, and we appreciate the time.
Love being on. Love chatting with you. I love your energy as always, brother, and I look forward to talking to you real soon.
You got it. My guy, the great Thomas Dimitroff. Thank you for listening to another incredible episode of the Adam Schein Podcast. Thomas Dimitroff, unbelievable. Bob Stew, incredible as always. Thank you to our listeners on SiriusXM, our listeners on Pandora, Thanks to our listeners on Apple Podcasts and with Stitcher. We record the Adam Schein Podcast all year round, so please hit the subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. You can always catch me every weekday on my SiriusXM radio show, Shine on Sports, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM's Mad Dog Sports Radio, Channel 82. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.
This is the Adam Schein Podcast. Touchdown! For more from Adam Schein, listen to Shine on Sports on Mad Dog Sports Radio, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM Mad Dog Sports Radio, Channel 82.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.